Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This hour, The Score is being brought to you by Gurney Hyundai. When searching for a new Hyundai, search for GurneyHyundai.com. It's me, Matt Spiegel. It's him, Eric Edholm from Pro Football Weekly. It's you, Score listeners, on a Friday night as we're all sitting in for Lawrence Holmes. I mean, not you, the listeners. You're not sitting in for Lawrence Holmes. Eric and I are. It's a lot of words just to get to Bob Laguerre, who joins us right now, the Chicago Bears beat writer for Pro Football Weekly at Bob Laguerre, L-E-G-E-R-E, as he joins us right now on The Score. What's up, Bob? How you been, man?
I'm doing good, and you know what? Torrential downpours today could not even slow down Matt Nagy's first practice as the Bears head coach. They were determined to go outside for 2 hours, and they did. They never even paused when the heavy rains came, and got a lot of things done, dropped a lot of balls, but under the circumstances, that's understandable. And it was kind of refreshing to see Nagy say afterward that sometimes you can benefit from practicing in conditions that aren't always perfect or ideal. And I don't know if you guys remember, the Bears had a coach named Mark Trestman who, I think if there was a threat of rain within 48 hours, would go inside when he was here. So it was nice to see.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so they actually got stuff done. I mean, how bad was the weather? Give us a little sort of description of what we were talking about here. Because up in Chicago, it was sort of rain. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah, no, it was off and on, and it rained really, really hard for like 10 or 15 minutes at a time, multiple times throughout the practice.
Wow. So I love the Trestman comp in that way. As you look for different ways to show toughness in an NFL training camp that has such limitations in terms of the amount of time you can actually even be on the field and the amount of hitting that's even allowed. So this is one way you can show toughness, is to stay outside in marginal weather, I suppose, Bob.
Yeah, and when you play in the Midwest, there's a chance that you may have to play in the rain or the snow at one or two times during the season. And, you know, I think it helps to, you know, it helps having done that in the past, even if it is a practice. You have to deal with those conditions. Not every team plays in a dome or in Florida or California. So, it makes a lot more sense than the way Trestman used to do it. So hopefully it'll work out better than it did when he was here.
What's your feel for the confidence level and comfort level of Mitchell Trubisky as he hits this camp as the unquestioned man?
Well, he says all the right things and does all the right things. And I think he really has bought in and just immersed himself in the whole thing. He seems like a guy who, to hear him talk in the offseason, he took off like 4 or 5 days to visit friends in Ohio and family in Ohio and some buddies out in North Carolina that he went to school with. But other than that, it was, you know, learning the playbook, it was watching film, it was working either formally or informally with his teammates. And he realizes the situation he's in and what the Bears have invested in him, and he's comfortable with it, and he really seems to enjoy it, seems to want to be the guy and want to be the guy that is the face of the franchise and leads this football.
One guy who you could maybe say didn't have an enjoyable 2017 season was Kyle Long, and yet, you know, he has another three off-season surgeries this year, and yet he was out there today. I mean, Trevathan was a little banged up. I mean, what's the feeling on Long and whether he can be one of those support pieces and you know, a leadership guy, one of the older dudes on the roster? I mean, what's the feeling about Kyle? I know he spoke today. What did you think about his words today?
Well, it was actually great to see him out there. The true test will be how he looks tomorrow morning at the second practice, and more importantly, how much he does in the third practice on Sunday, which is their first padded practice. I was actually shocked that he was out there for the whole time. I figured he would be a guy who would be brought along super slowly because that's what they did in the off season. But Nagy said that was the plan, to kind of nurse it along during the off season and have him ready to go. And when he said full go on Thursday for Kyle Lugan, I thought, there's no way. But, and granted, today was a little more than a walkthrough practice. They weren't hitting at full speed, but he was out there for the whole thing, running with the first team, and that's going to be huge, because if he's healthy for 16 games, the offensive line is a team strength. If he's not, they've got major problems, because they've already got a little discrepancy in the interior line with Cody White here, and whether James Daniels will start as a rookie or whether it's going to be Eric Cush, who's a journeyman who's played pretty well before but has always mostly been a backup. So if Kyle Long's there and he's playing at a full level, solves a lot of problems, and they can probably deal with, you know, starting a rookie like James Daniels, who is only 20 years old but could be the opening day starter.
Bob Laguerre from Pro Football Weekly is here with us. Bob, how are you going to – how will we notice – or, you know, feel the effects of Harry Hiestand's presence and hire? Like, what are we going to see or read about or hear about that's going to make us go, oh, that's a Hiestand thing, or this is how he's having an impact on these guys?
You know what? I think you're going to see a bunch of offensive linemen who are as technically sound as they've ever been. And Kyle Long is a guy who is a freak. He's got every physical gift you could possibly have. He's athletic. He's big. Strong. He's all that. He's never really been what you would call a great technician, and he's maybe a guy who could benefit more from Harry Hiestand's presence than anybody, but I think all these guys are going to benefit from him. Kyle Long talked about him today, about his commitment, the way he gets through to players. He's clearly a no-nonsense guy, and you know, he's got something to work with this year. If those guys are all healthy, like I said, that's a team strength.
Oh, Bob, I'm guessing with some maybe some better weather on the way, the weekend coming up, I'm sure some people are going to make the trip down to Bourbonnais, especially, as you said, for Sunday as the full contact practice. Having watched the team at OTAs, having seen kind of how things are trending, who are a couple of players we should be sort of keeping an extra eye on? Is it, you know, is it Anthony Miller? Obviously, Trey Burton's going to get a lot of attention because he got the decent money for his position. But is there somebody that you're sort of going to be dialed in on, or that you think fans really should keep an eye peel for?
Well, Allen Robinson's another guy who is like a little over 10 months removed from ACL surgery. He was at practice, went through the whole thing today, didn't hit anybody full speed, but was out there for the full 2 hours. And again, a little bit surprising. I thought he would be a guy who would be maybe practicing one day, off second day, and kind of back and forth. It remains to be seen whether he's going to be out there every day, but I think he's definitely, if not ahead of schedule, on pace to be ready for the season opener. That's a guy I want to watch throughout camp and see whether he can maintain a day-to-day grind of practicing every day. It looks like, you know, right now there's a good chance that he can. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for being 25 years old. His ability to recuperate and rehab are probably a lot better than guys who are 30 or 35. So that was another encouraging thing today.
Boy, Bob, when you think about the targets here for Trubisky, the wide receiver acquisitions, it's been a long time since there was a bunch of guys that intrigued you like this, where you've got Robinson, you've got Anthony Miller, the draft pick, you've got Taylor Gabriel with straight up real legit NFL speed, and hell, even the seventh rounder, Javon Wims, who can just jump high into the sky and give you those Guagi skills. It's like, this. I can't wait to see how those guys are going to get utilized. Javon Wims going to make this team, by the way, as a seventh round pick?
Yeah, he'll be on the team, and the guy you mentioned, Taylor Gabriel, is really exciting to watch. You could see it even today. He would catch a short pass and just blow by people. Now, granted, nobody was trying to tackle him, but he's clearly, among a bunch of fast guys on the football field, the fastest of those guys. He's like Tariq Cohen. Maybe not as stocky and muscular as Tariq Cohen, but super quick, and people, you know, wonder about whether he can hold up, and because he weighs about 165 pounds, but he's so fast and so quick. I don't know that anybody's ever going to get a clean shot on him. So you know, he's not a guy who's going to be real durable or probably catch a lot of passes over the middle. But you put him and Trey Burton and Tariq Cohen on the field at the same time, you know, you're going to cover 53 yards, you know, from sideline to sideline and 100 yards down the field, because those guys, all three of them, are capable of creating huge mismatches. And Trey Burton's a guy who, he's a tight end, and he's not going to really block anybody for you, but he's a matchup nightmare. No linebacker's really going to be able to cover him, I don't think. Maybe a couple guys in the league could do that. I think he's a guy that you have to use a cornerback or maybe a slot corner or a nickelback or something to cover him, because you're not going to be able to cover Trey Burton with a linebacker.
That's interesting stuff. I want to follow up and talk more about the offensive scheme with you, Eric, after we finish with Bob, because I know you wrote about the offensive scheme specifically. But as you're talking about Taylor Gabriel, we've had so much conversation about Tariq Cohen maybe being that guy who could be sort of their version of Tyreek Hill to put in specific situations to use the speed. Gabriel, but to get Gabriel out there in space like they would get Hill, or to get Gabriel out there one-on-one and just blow by somebody, why can't he be that Tyreek Hill-esque weapon at least a few times a game?
Yeah, and Bob, when you and I were standing next to each other at OTAs, I even think I said, this guy looks like the fastest player on the field. And, and in 2016, I had a defensive coordinator tell me, you know, you have enough trouble stopping Julio Jones, but then you've got to worry about this speedball in Taylor Gabriel, who can take the top off your defense. How do you defend that? So, Bob, I mean, in theory, if Robinson's healthy, he should be in line for a big year. Burton, too. I mean, all of a sudden, you've got four or five guys who can catch 40, 50 so odd passes, and that's really tough to defend.
Well, yeah, you start thinking about, and you start thinking, are there going to be enough footballs to go around? And when was the last time you thought that about a Bears offense? I mean, that maybe there's too many guys out there wanting the ball, but I think, like you said, there could be four or five guys with 40 or 50 catches, because this offense has the potential to create longer drives. They have to be on the field for 12 or 14 plays. Last year, we saw a lot of three and out. When you're going three and out, you really don't get anybody involved in the offense. But when you're putting together 10 and 12 and 14 play drives, you get enough touches for everybody. You keep everybody happy.
Bob, when you look back on Bears history and head coaches, I don't think they've ever done this before, this kind of hire. This is kind of a prototypical modern-day NFL hire over the last, 30 years. Just go grab the offensive coordinator from a terrific offensive head coach and grab somebody off that tree, whether it's the Bill Walsh tree or, you know, the Holmgren tree, and all those are the same or whatever. But like, or maybe it's a Shanahan or whoever. They've never gone and gotten the offensive coordinator assistant to be the head coach in this way, right? Am I missing anybody here in thinking about it that way?
Yeah. No, and that's what I saw all along. I don't know how much better they're going to be this year. I think, you know, 7-9 is realistic. They still play in a pretty strong division, and they've got a long way to go. They've totally churned the roster and gotten a lot younger. But I think this is an opportunity to watch a team that will actually be exciting and worth watching. And that'll be the biggest difference. I think they're going to be a little bit better. They might even be a lot better, but they'll be way more interesting to watch, because they're going to have a state-of-the-art offense. They're going to have a guy who knows offense, who has been in systems that have been top five offenses in the NFL, and he knows how it's done. And he's a sharp guy, and he's enthusiastic. And, you know, yeah, it's early, but guys have bought into his whatever he's selling. Guys are buying it. I'm telling you.
Roquan Smith, not in camp, unsigned, hasn't had his rookie deal finished up yet. What's the latest on him?
You know, Nagy today was asked if he was frustrated. He said, no, it is what it is. It's part of the process. It happens. You know, if the Bears were starting training camp at a normal time, like 30 other NFL teams, we wouldn't even be talking about Roquan Smith, because last year Mitch Trubisky signed on July 19th. Mm. So because he started early, it's more of an issue. You know, Nagy said he's a great kid, great football player. He studies, he's smart, he knows what he's supposed to do. If he misses two or three practices, it won't even matter. But even by the time they play the Hall of Fame game. Now, if it stretches into two or three weeks, you know, Joey Bosa was able to miss a lot. I think every preseason game, maybe a regular season game, and come in and have a tremendous year. I don't know that will work for Roquan Smith, because You know, he's a guy who's got to beat out Nick Kwiatkowski, and I think he will if he's here. But if he's not here, Nick Kwiatkowski is not a bad football player. He's filled in very well for the Bears the past 2 years when guys have gotten injured, and he's not going to hand that starting job over without a fight. So, you know, if Roquan Smith is going to be your opening day starter, he needs to get in here without missing, you know, to me, if he misses more than 2 weeks, then you're in trouble. He's not going to be your opening day starter. But if he's in sometime next week, I don't think it's a problem.
He's Bourbonnais Bags legend Bob Laguerre. Have you played yet, Bob? Is it Donlin's, or are there other spots? And are you and Larry Mayer still the team to beat amongst all Bears media?
Well, you know, we played last night, and I got to tell you, Larry was starting to get heavy. Been starting him for like 20 years now. And I'm not getting any younger, so he needs to up his game a little bit. I'll be honest, neither one of us played that well last night, but it's still early. You know, we're like players. You know, it's our first day, too, so things should be better tonight.
That's right. Good scouting report when I head down there. Yeah.
That was legit. And the beginning of some long-awaited infighting between Larry Mayer and Bob Laguerre.
Already hate each other.
They're already on each other's
always
face.
A treat.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Bob, thanks, man. Have a great night. Thanks for the time.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, you got it. A few years ago, when I was down there in Bourbonnais, and I was like, wow, no, they really are unbelievably great at bags. Larry Mayer of the ChicagoBears.com and Bob Laguerre, then of the Herald and now of Pro Football Weekly, flat-out legends for a reason.
Well, they must be talking strategy. They're always going out to dinner with each other on the road. They must be, like, working on technique, you know. I don't know what it is. You got to give them their credit for their commitment.
A couple weeks ago, I happened upon the cornhole professional finals
on TV
on ESPN.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever watched that? Have you ever seen just how absurdly good the best in the world are?
No, because it would make me not want to play. I'm not very good to begin with. Like, by normal dude standards, I'm not good. So I can't even imagine what those people are like.
My wife is really good. Oh. So I've had to try and get better because I'm tired of her kicking my ass. In
carry your weight, yeah.
Oh, it's embarrassing. But these guys, like, just one after another, just placing it right there on the perfect spot as it slides up into the hole. And then if they're blocking, if they successfully block it, they then try to what they call airmail it, where they go over the top and just go directly
the
into the
shot,
hole.
Right, the Mickelson,
They're good. And I'm not, is the point.
It's beyond my knowledge, yep.
This segment was brought to you by Spot Hero, and finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. I want to expand the conversation on the offense because I know you wrote about it a lot, and I want to figure out how Matt Nagy might use some of these guys and just sort of the uniqueness of Bears fans being in this spot with this offense, this coaching staff, in this moment. It shouldn't be unique in the history of a football franchise.
Right, no.
But it is for them.
Yeah, and it does feel, look, maybe we're building up too much. You know, maybe Trubisky's not ready yet, but there's a lot of exciting elements to it. And I think one of the biggest things is they've got some really creative offensive guys in the room.
Let's talk about it next on 670 The Score. It's Matt Spiegel and Eric at Home. Keep it right here. You've got 670 The Score. We are right here with you, Matt Spiegel and Eric at Home. Nice to hear from all of you on the text lines at 670-11 who are enjoying hearing from me and us, Eric. Here's Peoria Matt. Speaks, nice to hear you. Sorry you had to be saddled with that home. Just kidding. He's kidding.
You know, it's all right.
He's just kidding. Yeah, he really is. No, I know he is. Peoria Matt, he's nothing but a jokester. Peoria Matt is so good at texting and writing creative texts that one time I asked him if he had any background in comedy writing. I was like, you're too good.
Yeah, this
you're
is
too
natural.
Quick.
Yeah.
You're too quick. It's too constant. You're too consistent.
Isn't it bother you when somebody's like really good on Twitter? You're like, man, you're just good. Like Joel Embiid, right? He's like the man on Twitter. Have you ever followed him?
Yes.
You know, some people just have that knack.
He's just, Embiid is just like, he doesn't care.
Right.
Right?
He's quirky.
That's the key. Yep. He's got the confidence and he's got the kind of just little bit of a distant apathy that you need to just let yourself fly.
It's effortless.
All right, so help me figure this out. exactly how this might work, this offense under Matt Nagy. I keep thinking Kansas City, but I also think Philadelphia and where Doug Peterson took it. And then my brain starts spinning with Mark Helfrich and what he brings in terms of the Oregon stuff into the mix there. And then I've got Harry Hiestand power running from the Notre Dame attack that I've been watching the last few years. And I'm trying to piece it all together. Do you have a picture, Eric, of what this might look like?
I think all those things you mentioned are going to be elements of it. And you know, talking to Trey Burton the other a couple weeks ago, I was saying, okay, how much overlap between what you ran in Philly under Doug Peterson and what Matt Nagy, who used to work with Peterson in Kansas City, is going to run here. He's like, it's the same position, you know, the little tweaks here and there. So basically, Burton can come in and teach the rest of these guys what it is.
That's an awesome. That's an awesome piece to have on your team that way.
Absolutely. The two teams in the NFL that ran the most RPOs, run pass options, Kansas City Chiefs under Matt Nagy calling plays, Doug Peterson in Philadelphia. So here comes the RPO. That's what it is for people who, you know, it may look like a play action pass to the naked eye, right? But Mitch Trubisky is essentially counting the guys in the box. You know, if it's six, we're running the football. If it's seven or more, you know, the pass is an option here. And
he makes the choice.
He makes the call.
He literally puts the ball. He puts the ball in the belly of the running back and either leaves it there or takes it out.
Yeah.
That's the difference. It's not just an audible. Like, the decision is not made and nobody knows it.
Right.
Even his own teammates do not know it.
Right.
Right.
And the way to kind of look for it, too, you'll see the offensive linemen blasting forward like they're run blocking. It'll look like a run play because it is a run play, but it's tagged on the back end with this pass option. Very simple stuff. We're not talking about, you know, complex routes. They're usually a little out pattern, a little bubble screen, something sort of close to the line of scrimmage, a slant, whatever. But you can build off that too. You can do a double move the next time if they squat on it. There's so many layers to it, but that's the biggest thing right there. What Nagy people told me was that his personnel tends to be the same, meaning he uses one tight end, one back, three receivers most of the time. That's kind of his base offense. You'll see two tight ends here. You'll see a two-back set once in a while. You'll see four wide, no tight end.
That's interesting because I've been imagining you know, Shaheen as that, as one kind of tight end.
Sure.
And then Burton as the other kind of tight end.
Absolutely.
And you're too deep at both of those because you've got Deion Sims.
Deion Sims.
And you've got, who am I thinking of? Daniel Brown.
Brown.
Right.
Bronicker and all Bronicker, those guys.
So, yep. But I've been imagining it's like both Shaheen and Burton on the field at the same time.
Yep.
Not too often, you don't think?
Well, no. The two main personnel packages are going to be 11 and 12. 11 is one tight end, one back. 12 is one back, two tight ends. So those are kind of the two base off, you know, personnel packages.
Yeah.
Within those, though, he'll split Burton out wide. He'll put him offset in the backfield. He'll motion somebody into the backfield like Cohen. You know, he'll put Taylor Gabriel on a jet sweep from out wide.
Mm-hmm.
It's about using, you know, Chase Daniel had a great way of describing it. He said it's window dressing. We'll give you the same personnel packages because that's how defenses count. They, all right, they're in 12 personnel, whatever. But we'll move the formations all around. We'll go from spread to a bunch formation. We'll go from bunch to trips right, to this, to that, and it just constantly leaves him guessing. You've run five runs on the same formation, then you're going to throw it to the other side. It's about misdirection, keeping the defense, giving him three options, run, pass, or RPO.
Mm. So, and what's exciting as I'm hearing you talk about it, I'm starting to picture like some of those guys out in the flat, all of a sudden it's just a short little pass, but all of a sudden they're one-on-one, right? Or the mismatch, which is created. Like, I'm so tired of having seen Bears offenses that are letting the defense dictate what they do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And this is modern offense where you go up and you're putting the defense on the defensive.
Yep.
You're the one making them react. And it seems the way they're talking about it, even one of the ways that Bob Legere had mentioned it to us last segment, looking for mismatches, kind of like a good basketball offense, a good positionless basketball offense. It's like, oh, look what we did. Because we ran this action, we got our 6'10 power forward on the 6'6", 3, you know, small forward, and we can do what we want. We can post him up, right? You're looking for individual mismatches sometimes.
Absolutely. And use Burton as a good example. Bob said, look, he's got to be covered by a DB of some sort, whether it's a nickel corner, a safety, whatever it is. if they realize he could post this guy up, he's got 4 inches on him. Let's do that. Let's throw him a hook pass. Let's throw him this or that.
Yeah.
You know, he's a good example of a guy like that. Cohen, are they in man defense? Do they follow him out to the perimeter? If you've got a linebacker following Tariq Cohen in space, forget about it. You know, So if you're staying in zone, hey, we've got Allen Robinson to get, you know, to eat up that space. And so I love the versatility of what they have. And the word is that Jordan Howard's gotten at least semi-competent at catching the football. So when he's on the field and it's just him, it's not guaranteed it's just going to be
Wait a minute. So how has that happened? And how do you trust that without it being a game situation? Because so much of that has got to be mental.
Oh, I know. Him, yeah. Right? And he I don't remember him saying that this offseason. I'm trying to remember. I was there one day when he talked, and he said, I've just put a lot of work in, a couple little concentration things, this and that. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't.
Tiki Barber learned not to fumble.
He did. Later in his career.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Tom Coughlin taught him how not to fumble.
I mean,
so I guess it can happen.
I remember a receivers coach had a talented young receiver. I'm going to keep the guy nameless just because I'm sort of friends with him. But he was gifted, tall, big. I mean, a Gwagi guy, right?
Thank you, sir.
But we catch about 52% of the balls thrown his way. I mean, he was just one of those guys. He dropped it, whatever. They decided to do a drill where they threw eggs to him, and he had to catch eggs and sort of learn how to, you know, that takes one set of a skill set. Then all of a sudden the coach pulls out a brick and throws a brick at him. The idea is that you can't just get in that rote muscle memory where you're just, okay, here comes a football. You've got to adjust. Some are fastballs, some are changeups, some are coming. And it, all of a sudden the guy became an all pro, you know? So it just
really,
something can trigger those things occasionally.
I love that.
Yeah.
The brick and the egg.
The brick and the egg. It's, you know, it's my breakfast tomorrow.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you're tying a few things together.
I am.
First of all, we're talking about catching things. So that brings us back to Mike Borzello and Wilson Contreras.
Right.
And the endless nuance of pitch framing, which you could read about in 5,000 words in Zahid of Sharma's piece on The Athletic. And then you're talking about catching eggs. And now it's time to bring Herb and Tony Gill back into the conversation, because I watched your Gordon Ramsay egg video.
Oh, we need an update.
Yeah, well, I watched it. It's 4 minutes, 4 minutes long. The first 90 seconds of your Gordon Ramsay scrambling eggs video are him throwing like tomatoes on the vine into a pan and like giant portobello mushrooms in there. And then he's like making toast. I'm like, why didn't you tell me to skip ahead 90 seconds? You wasted prime bits of my life, Herb.
I forgot about that video and how it starts off. He makes a whole like English breakfast. Those vines on the tomatoes on the vines so you can pick them up after. Easily.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay. He's probably good at what he does.
Yeah.
Okay,
and then he burns the toast in the middle of the video.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has to make new toast.
Okay. But then he gets to the eggs, which is what we're talking about here. And you said saucepan. And is that really what is that's a pot, you know? Like, that's a pot. It's deep.
Like a saucepan, yeah.
Okay, I guess that is a saucepan. Like, it's not a frying pan. It's a saucepan. You need tall sides to the thing.
Exactly. So the eggs don't splatter over the side.
Yeah.
The edge.
Yeah, well, and you're really mixing. You're mixing fervently. You are aggressively manhandling those eggs with your rubber spatula.
Yeah, and he puts creme fraiche in there. I don't have creme fraiche, so I just go without.
He puts creme fraiche in the eggs?
Yeah, at the end. Like at
folds
the,
it in.
Yeah, exactly.
Folds it.
Yeah.
That's a culinary term.
Yeah.
I don't.
Okay. All right. I'm going to try this tomorrow morning. I'm going to make those eggs, and I'm going to report back. And if it's not life-changing, I'm going to find Herb and Tony and physically cause them some pain. Damn, that's a good song. Keep playing it. George Michael can sing.
Cooking some eggs.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Eric.
Scrambled eggs.
Coach Fitz and the Wildcats host Michigan, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, Illinois, and more this fall at Ryan Field. Season and single game tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. Ed Holm can sing.
A little falsetto
over
there.
No idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll jump on with you guys one time, sure, you know. Oh, I'm sorry, you weren't inviting me.
No. Yeah. With the band?
Yes.
I thought you meant with parody songs.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, none of them. No, you can't join for any of them.
That's funny.
This is Mitchell in Des Plaines on 670 The Score. What's up, Mitchell? How are you?
Hey, good, thank you. First of all, I'd like to bring to your attention that, Mitchell Trubisky is not Alex Smith. And in Kansas City, they're going to really have a huge void with his departure, because the second coming there is not exactly what I call an all-star talent. Now, with Trubisky, I think you have a lot of unknowns. Obviously, the whole world and the universe is up to him, which I don't think is a good idea. We have a division, our division, we're 0-4 for the last how many years? I think the Bears' defense...
Well, hold on. They play six division games. So who are the 0-4 against?
We are 0-4 in our division for the last 2 years, correct?
Six division games.
Six division
three
games.
Three opponents, two each. Yep.
Okay, so my point is that's not exactly what I call a benchmark. And listen, I don't gamble, so I'm not approaching this because I'm there because I lost some bets. Mm-hmm. I just, for 49 years, I love the Bears. And I've never felt this pessimistic about the position of the quarterback since Cade McNown.
This is an absurd perspective, Mitchell. Hang on a second, because this is an absurd place you're coming from. If you're not doing a bit, how can you be more pessimistic than you've been in a long time about the quarterback situation? What did you see that made you this pessimistic if you're not doing
excellent
a bit?
Excellent question, and let me reply. First of all, Trubisky only played 13 games in college. Okay, so what you're saying, and everyone's justifying, we only played 13 games in college, so we're really just beta testing him. And, he didn't have a lot of things to throw to last year. And, his maid didn't make his bed. Well, the problem is that, why you have all these excuses.
All right. His maid didn't make his bed? Did we have that in there? I'm just done with the entire experience. Look, I didn't wait this long to come back and host a radio show
right. And
talk to the likes of Mitchell and Displains. I did not.
Boy.
It's not what I'm going to choose to do with my time.
What if that
life.
Was really Trubisky? Like, his first name is Mitchell. Let's point that out. Right.
Right. And he's just having some fun.
Us. Yeah.
Just clowning on his own stuff. It could be. What did he say? He's going 0-10?
0-10. Yeah. I had to look what that. I didn't really know what that
did you
meant.
Look it up?
Yeah.
What
well, it's like. It's like 0-30, I think,
right.
Except he wears number 10. I think I have that right.
Ah, yeah. So it's not like he's not like going one-third of 0-30.
No, this is
on social media, but he's staying. He's getting rid of the whole thing.
Yeah, he's just making it fun with the 10, I guess. Yeah, so he hasn't tweeted since like July 7th or something. I mean, God, I don't know how he's done it.
I don't know if I don't know if any of us should ever tweet again. After what has happened. Just the past few days, did you see the director of Guardians of the Galaxy, number one and number two? He just got fired. He's not directing number three because
of a tweet.
Because of some old jokes that he made that were really in horrible taste.
Right.
Like, he tried to be a provocateur and do these shocking jokes. And apparently, lately, he's been going after right-wing conservatives. So they dug up some old tweets of his and put that out there, and he just got fired.
Oh,
today,
my gosh,
he
wow.
got fired.
And then, of course,
Josh
the Brewers.
Hader.
Yeah, Hader, yep.
The Brewers kid. Like, the internet is forever. That is
Donnie DiVincenzo has his breakout game in the finals. All of a sudden, people dug on him.
Right?
Yeah.
Who's a quarterback
Trubisky.
From Wyoming?
Trubisky. Remember, I like, you know what?
And
you know,
beer. And beer.
And beer, right. Yeah. Josh Allen from, I guess the key is just go back and delete anything before
doesn't
you
matter.
Delete the whole page.
No,
the whole thing.
But this is what I can't figure out, Tony. Those tweets were deleted. Hader had deleted those tweets.
Oh, yeah.
This guy, the Guardians of the Galaxy guy, had deleted his tweets.
Screen grabs.
No, but if they're deleted, how can they go back and find them?
Is it like a cachet thing or something?
Yeah,
it
must be, like, because there's certain sites that will cachet every day of the internet, like every page. And so, yeah, people know how to. Yeah, you are in trouble.
I'm in trouble.
If you ever did anything. That's why I just like to admit everything that I've done. That is a much easier way to be. Remember that time I was really drunk and I tried to bond with a Score employee and I did some real stupid-ass stuff and we had to apologize?
Glad we're past that.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
Own it. Come out.
Onward
own it.
And upward.
Onward, exactly.
Live your truth. Live your truth.
Yeah, thank you. I remember that phrase. Be who you are is another one that we used to say. On some show. What show was that? I don't know. There's been too many shows.
Yeah.
Too many shows and too many partners. But I like this one right here with Eric at home. Yeah. It's Matt Spiegel and Eric at home right here with you on 670 The Score. All right. You know what I want to talk about with you? I want to talk about animals that swim.
Okay.
Okay?
Yep.
At both ends of the spectrum, from 50,000 pounds to 15 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
This requires some video accompaniment, right?
Yes.
And so for those who do not have access to the interwebs, we will have to describe said videos. But for those who do have access to the interwebs, go to our Twitter accounts right now.
Sync it up.
@MattSpiegel670.
Yep.
@Eric_@home.
Yep.
and we will put these things out there into the bloodstream, into the world, and then we can discuss because it's fascinating to me.
Absolutely.
All right. Keep it right here on 670 The Score. Tony Gill and Herb Lawrence on the other side. It is the Lawrence Holmes Show, but here in guest week, it's me, Matt Spiegel, and him, Eric Edholm, here with you hanging out. All right, so if you follow us on the Twitters, you have just seen now, we tweeted it. You sent it out earlier, and I just retweeted it. That baby, how old is that baby swimming? Like maybe a year and a half?
I think it said barely 2 years old or almost two. Just over two, right in that range, yep.
It is so incredibly compelling to me to see that baby swimming. This is, he's what, like 15 pounds, maybe? 20 pounds?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Soaking wet.
He's,
One time he could use it. Right?
He's nicely done. His grace, his natural swimming efficiency. Like, I guess it's kind of like the womb, right?
Yeah.
It's like you're in the womb and you've got, you're surrounded by the liquid, so maybe you take to it just instinctively, but like, it's not like he went to classes or anything. They just threw a freaking baby in the water and he showed you that, oh yeah, I'll figure this out. He's got to figure it out.
Yeah.
And if you watch this thing, oh my God. So the little baby, here's what he does. Face down. In the water.
For long stretches of time.
But like hauling ass. Yes. Just like not like conventional swimming technique, but just like treading forward.
Uh-huh.
Right? And then he flips over onto his back and breathes.
Yeah.
And then flips again, like finishes the flip, doesn't flip back the other way, finishes the flip using his momentum and continues hauling his little baby ass forward in the water. Like, the efficiency of his swimming was incredible, and it was totally unique. I don't see humans swim that way.
Right. Yeah. No, you obviously see them just kind of turn the head to one side or the other, you know, I guess if we're watching swim meets or something like that. But, I mean, it honestly was like, once I got over the panic of watching this baby go face down for like a nine count, like, you know, as a father with two young twins, I'm like,
get him out of there,
you know, and I can't help. I'm like gonna strangle my phone as I watch the video. But then it's like oddly peaceful, you know, it's like you're watching it and you're going, oh my gosh, this is one of the most incredible things I've ever seen.
I watched it again and again and again.
Yeah.
Because again, it's like I've never seen anything swim like that.
Right.
Including all humans that
anything
I've ever watched
swimming.
Nothing.
Yes.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Like, does the spin. He just figured out that's how you do it.
Yeah.
Go to our Twitter accounts and watch this thing. So he's like, and there's one point, he gets discombobulated a little when he flips sometimes. He loses his sense of direction.
Yeah.
But there's one point at the end where, like, he's trying to swim for the stairs and he's going the wrong way. And as he does the flip, he realizes he's going the wrong way and he corrects his course and efficiently gets exactly where he wants to go.
I mean,
just human beings are amazing.
Yeah.
We can do all kinds of things.
Maybe we should have had that water birth. That's what that would have been the difference, right? They would have come into the world knowing the treats of the water. But I've never seen anything quite like it. I think the kid is special because I've seen my twins at swim class and they don't look like that. They get very rigid. They get like, you know,
they
get
tense
turned
up,
over.
Right?
Oh, yeah. The back doesn't, they don't do the back. That's like, this kid is just floating around,
he's
grabbing
doing
a breath,
his thing.
Going face down.
What are you guys doing? You can't put a baby in. I was shocked by this video.
It is a little jarring at first.
At first you're shocked, but then you're like, wait a minute. That kid knows what he's doing. He's a better swimmer than you, Tony Gill.
That kid's built
up a lot of trust by now. Okay, trust.
Yeah, I don't think they filmed like the first time they threw him in the water.
Let's see how this goes.
Let's throw the baby in the water. Turn on the camera.
Grab me a beer, will you? Yeah.
Right, I'm sure there were beers nearby, but like, no. Oh. Clearly, the baby knows what he's doing. But I think there's an adult nearby that's kind of shadowing him. I think a little bit in the water. No.
No.
And then, but I saw that for the first time as I was at the airport waiting to come home from a trip to Boston and Cape Cod that I just took with wife and child, and we went whale watching. So this is the other end of the animal spectrum. This is a 50,000-pound animal, these humpback whales.
Yeah.
We're talking about somewhere between 25 and 30 tons. That's how big
these
things are. And I just tweeted out that video at Matt Spiegel 670. I've got obviously a lot of pictures, but like, man, that was completely life changing. We hired this guy, Captain Darren. I highly recommend if you're going to Cape Cod and you want to go on a whale watch, you hire this guy. And it was just the three of us, just the three of us on his boat. And he's like, all right, here's what we're going to do. I think I know where I saw two whales the other day. We got to go there. So you get on and he immediately, like, you get out of the harbor and then he guns it. We hauled ass for 4 miles out, straight out into the ocean.
Oh, yeah.
And just like flying. I don't know how fast, but I know it was
cruising fast. Yeah.
And it was like we're bouncing up and down and slapping the water and like, I'm scared for a moment, but I figured Captain Darren has his own kid. He'd like to stay alive and be a dad for a while. And my 6.5-year-old, Ruben, who's 6.5 now. Yeah, I know. Listeners who might remember, when he was born, he's 6.5.
Wow.
But he's screaming, this is awesome! This is the most awesome thing ever in my life! You're 6.5, kid. You don't have much of a life, but I get you.
Hey.
Just going fast was what did it for him. And so we get out to this one spot, and he stops. He's like, all right, this is where I saw two whales the other day. And within 10 seconds.
No.
Whales are right there.
That
right,
fast.
That fast. That's how much he had it nailed and dialed in. And we had about a 45-minute show of humpback whales. There were probably 7 of them in this pod. And he kept moving the boat around carefully, and we'd get closer and closer. And they're swimming under the boat, and it terrifies you for a second. But he's like, they're smart. They don't mess with us. We don't mess with them. You know, they're crazy smart. But the grace of these 50,000-pound animals as they move through the water was just completely jaw-dropping.
And they're putting on a show for you, right? I mean, that's part of the deal, isn't it? Like that they're aware of your presence in some form and that they're performing, right? I mean,
I don't know.
You don't think so?
He didn't talk about it that way. He said they were feeding. So like we kept seeing them, like their mouths would come up.
Okay,
and you'd see their giant mouths because there was mackerel everywhere.
Oh.
And like they work together. Like two of them will push all the mackerel to one spot and then two others will just like swim straight. Yeah, they're total food partners.
Right.
You know? Just like me helping you over at the vending machine if your chips got stuck.
That was cool of you. That
and
was really cool.
I will help you.
You will when it happens.
Yeah.
I grew up in Massachusetts. You know, I was telling you, I've probably been on about 18 whale watches, and they all start out so confidently. And by the end of the day, there's like 9 seasick people. Nobody's seen a whale ever. You know, nobody's eaten. You've gotten sunburned. It's terrible. You've got, you know. So your experience is like nothing that I told you the kayak story in Mexico. That was lucky. But within 10 seconds, that's what blows me away.
He nailed it. He said, all right, I'm going to go here. And he went there, and
Captain
then there
Darren.
They were. And just, I mean, I don't know if you've ever... I had never been that far out into the open ocean, all right? And the quiet, like obviously there's nobody out there except us and the whales and the mackerel and stuff. And just the quiet and the stillness of it, like I get it now. I get how people can get addicted to that kind of stuff. And like you work your whole life to get a boat and you want to sail around the world or just like go hang out in the water. That quiet and that stillness is pretty remarkable.
I asked my father-in-law, he's got a boat and he takes it out and, you know, he's getting, you know, to the point where it's a lot of work, a lot of upkeep and all that stuff. And I said, what's your favorite part about boating? Like, what do you like the best? And, you know, he sort of didn't really answer at first. We get out in the open water out in Lake Michigan. It was a beautiful day. Same thing you just said. And he said, just being there, just being on the water. It was a beautiful sunny day.
Yeah.
The wind was blowing and I got it. Like I understood why he would spend hours working on the boat and do all these things to get it ready. And then boom, you're there and you go, life's not bad. Man.
It shouldn't be that hard, or it shouldn't be as hard as it is to find stillness and quiet in this world. But it really is, you know, it's like, I have a hard time turning off my damn phone.
Oh, 100%.
You know, how many do you ever install and then uninstall Twitter and or Facebook from your phone?
I've done it. Yeah.
I've done it more times than I care to admit.
Yeah.
Because I'll find myself at the end of a day, be like, I think I spent probably 3 hours just tooling around doing nothing.
Oh, yeah.
On social media, just wasting my life away.
We have kind of a rule. If we go on vacation, like, only if like somebody's texting me breaking news can I then log out. You know what I mean?
One of those
rare situations or whatever. But yeah, so I have to do it. I have to just detach, because if it's there and I don't uninstall it, You know? Yeah. Oh, let me grab a sandwich, and while I'm there, check Twitter. Yeah, it's just it's not worth
it. I once got an app called App Block, which lets you block certain apps that you can use
like
for certain parts of the day.
Oh.
Like, you can set time restrictions.
How brilliant.
Like, for me, when I was, you know, doing middays, and I so between 2 p.m., when the show was over, and 7 p.m. when, like, the games begin.
Good for you.
I do not need to be on Twitter.
No.
I did not need to be on Twitter. And now I don't need to be ever on Twitter, but and yet I am. But, like, so for those 5 hours, I'd have AppBlock tell me not that I can't open Twitter. But you know what I would do? I would go to AppBlock and turn it off, and then I would go to Twitter.
It's like hitting the snooze bar. It's like you're just totally circumventing the
All
whole
I'm
thing.
Doing yeah, is yeah. setting up, like, another barrier that I myself am going to tear down.
Sometimes it's nice to not know things.
Oh, yeah,
like
absolutely.
Because it leads to more conversation with another human being versus my phone.
You slow down. Slow down. Hold on.
It got a little dark there for a minute, man.
Wait a minute.
Like, wow.
Conversation? Actual human connection?
Yeah, because it was like, oh, did you hear this story? Yeah, I heard the story. Yeah. Where does the conversation go from
yeah,
there?
Yeah, where do you go
yeah.
from there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
no,
like,
you're
no,
right.
I didn't know this story. Can you please explain to me?
You're right. You're right. Well, I got to do that with Eric today. I got to share something with Eric today that he had not seen.
That was cool.
Right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about that when we come back, because like, it's a sporting event. It's just kind of it's one of those mythic sporting tales that I've heard about and read about for decades. And all of a sudden, there it is in living color.
Yep.
And we both watched that today. We'll talk about that, among other things, for the last hour of the show. It's Matt Spiegel and Eric Edholm. And for Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.